is K-A-Y-T, Gina Alexandria. The gospel is on the radio at 88.1. Call up somebody. Tell them it's going to be all right. K-A-Y-T. Got the gospel transmitting all day.
Have a seat. So, when I was thinking, when my daddy texted me, he did. He texted me last year, and I was like, no, I'm good. I'm good on that. And so this year, he texted me, and I said, sure. And so he said, cool, you're up. Now listen, to a lot of people, this doesn't seem like a big deal or a lot of pressure, but just understand from my heart, okay? This is my father's stage, okay? He's been preaching for over 30 years, longer than I've been alive, okay? Everybody out there, whether they say it or not, are here to compare whether I'm a preach like him or like my mama. It's a lot of pressure. He's got several years ahead of me. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what am I going to preach? Maybe I'll preach about Hannah and the prayer that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about the woman with the issue of blood and the reach that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about Esther and the sacrifice that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about Job and the suffering that later got him his promise. And none of those seem to fit. So I looked at Sarah and Abraham, and of course, it seems only fitting that I would preach on Sarah and Abraham, not just because they're awesome, but because my mother's name in Spanish is Sarah, and my father played Abraham in the Bible Experience. So it seems very fitting that I would preach about Abraham and Sarah. So let's talk. Abraham, in the beginning, is promised blessings that are going to overflow him. He is promised that he will have seed, he will have offspring, he's gonna be great, he's gonna be a wonderful man, he's gonna have nations and nations and nations. His promises overflow exceedingly and abundantly indeed. Even Lot and Abraham had to separate because God had already exceeded their blessings. It was too much for them to stay together. They had to separate. And so when we go later on in the story of Abraham and Sarah, I relate so much to Sarah, not only because she battled with infertility, but because she did not have a full knowledge of what God had promised her husband. A lot of times we are promised an inheritance, not because of who we are, but because of who we have connected to. And so it is important in the story that I understand that Sarah is kind of like the side person in the story. When you think of Sarah, you automatically think of Abraham or Isaac, the promise. You never can really connect Sarah to Ishmael and Hagar. And so in between God saying that Abraham is going to be great, and he's going to be awesome, and he's going to have children, and all of this wonderful stuff is going to happen to him, a whole city is destroyed. A whole city. How do I know? Very, very good question, okay? And so I'm sitting and I'm reading the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, filled with sin, filled with faithless people, who do not believe that God is the Most High God. And so Abraham is talking to God, and he is like straight up negotiating. Now, what is cool to me is that in the biblical days, people had so much access to God. They could talk to him, they build their altar, they sit and they have a conversation. This is the Lord that they're having a conversation with. So the Lord comes to him and he tells him, I'm going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm tired of them. They won't get it together, so I'm going to destroy them. Abraham's response is, well, if you see 50, If you just see 50 people, will you surely just save those 50 people and not destroy the whole city? And the Lord is like, well, yeah, if I find 50, I won't destroy it at all. And I thought to myself, huh, he sound real confident that they ain't gonna find 50 people. And I think Abraham realized that as well. So he was like, okay, wait. Okay, what if it's just 40 people? And the Lord was like, well, okay, if it's 40 people, I won't destroy. I'm like, you are negotiating with God on these numbers. He gets all the way down to 10. And the Lord says, I will not destroy if I find 10 people. And you all know, and maybe you don't, Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, but God saved Lot and his family, all the people who did not look back. Why didn't he save Lot's wife? I thought to myself, like, he could have gave her a warning. He could have told her, like, don't look back again. You really on a quick edge right now. Don't look back again, okay? It's getting real salty in your life right now. But as soon as she looks back, without hesitance, without doubt, boom, she's a pillar of salt. Now, why is that interesting to me? Her husband did not look back. And when he got to his destination, he didn't mourn. Because I thought, okay, since he didn't look back, he don't know that his wife is a pillar of salt. So when he gets to his destination, he gonna be like, man, oh my God, shave my head, tear my robe, look. None of that happened. He continues moving on as if he didn't lose his wife. I tried to figure out why he didn't save her, and I find that if you allow what's behind you to become more important than the promise that God has ahead of you, then you will allow yourself to be destroyed before you get to your destination. It wasn't that she wasn't a good woman. It wasn't that she wasn't worthy of saving. He already saved her. It was her disobedience to the messenger of God that put her in a salty situation. So we have to understand the risk that happens when we look back. The risk that happens when we want to become consumed by the things that God is trying to destroy. Why was it hard for her to leave and go forward? Well, what is the problem? Why would you want to look back at something that you know is being destroyed? It will not come back. It's not going to be rebuilt. And everything that God has promised you, I mean her, is better than what's behind you. And so we're walking through. And Lot is saved. He got his kids. And he's not mourning. But that's not what I came here to talk to you all about. Just giving you a little history of what's happening in between Abraham being told he's going to have an offspring and the destruction that happened in between that. And so in the middle of Abraham receiving this information, this knowledge, in the middle of this, Hagar comes along. And she is a slave. So she has to yield and submit to whatever her mistress or master tell her to do. She cannot say no. But Abraham could. So Sarah is like really depressed. She's sad. She hasn't had a child yet. It's been years and years, 10 years. They've been in Canaan, and she has not had a child yet. Right before all of this happens, God tells Abraham, I'm going to bless you with an offspring. You're going to have a seed. When we go to the next chapter, Sarah is like, I'm not having a baby. Go ahead and sleep with Hagar. And I was really confused because I was trying to figure out why he didn't say, Sarah, I was just talking to the Lord. And he said that we're going to be blessed beyond measure. He said that we're going to have our own offspring, that I'm going to be the father of many nations. Why he didn't communicate with his wife about what the Lord had said, because if he had communicated, she probably would have said, well, let's not sleep with Hagar then. She sends Hagar to Abraham, and Abraham agrees to this request. It made me wonder, what are our Hagars? Our backup plans to what God has said. Had Abraham been walking by faith and had been walking in what God had told him, then he wouldn't have made a backup plan to what the Lord had said. Hagar and Ishmael are the backup plan. They are the distraction, the detour along the destiny, the destination. We all have a distraction. A Hagar, whether it be sickness, illness, computers, work, job, we have to understand that we cannot be so thirsty for a position that we forget the power that we have on the inside of us. Abraham was thirsty to jump ahead of God's will. He was thirsty to produce early. But what happens when you produce early fruit that you was not supposed to be messing with, that you was not supposed to be linked up with, what happens? He lays with Hagar and she gets pregnant. Now look, this is women. As soon as Hagar gets pregnant, as soon as she had this baby, she is like walking around, girl, you ain't worthy. Ooh, you didn't have no baby. Ooh, don't you wish you was pregnant like me? She's treating her in contempt, is what the word says, which the definition of contempt is worthless, treating someone worthless. And so she is treating her with contempt. Sarah goes to Abraham and she's like, look, your side chick though, she is trying me. I'm not for it. Gotta figure this out. Now listen to Abraham's response. She your servant. Do with her what you will. You done laid with this lady. You done agreed to having sex with her. And now she's Sarah's servant? She's been serving you quite well. As far as I know, you've been served very well. When we throw away our responsibilities, we throw away our promise. When we give the option, the backup plan is you throwing away your promise. When you have a backup plan to what God said, it is saying, I believe you, but. When we say but, it erases everything that we said prior to. And so you cannot expect that good fruit is going to come from a seed that you planted. What you form will not prosper. For the hands that God creates with are prosperous hands. And so Sarah has thrown her promise away to Hagar. She has thrown it away and she's giving it up because she doesn't know what God said. And Abraham is allowing her to throw away her gift because he doesn't have an ear to hear what God said. It's very similar to Job. When I was reading Job and the messengers were coming and they were like, yo, you're gonna be great, you're gonna live long, you're gonna have a lot of children, you have nations and nations of children, it's gonna be okay. And he was like, no, I'm still sore, I'm still going through trouble, I'm still suffering. He missed what the messenger was saying. It's mean I'm doing my good preaching, y'all. He missed what the messenger was saying. How often are you missing what the messenger is saying? How often are you allowing yourself to be consumed by your struggle that you can't see success? How often do we allow ourselves to stay lame, broken, as people step over us over and over again, as Hagars produce fruit that belong to us? How often do we allow ourselves to be so consumed by the tests and trials of life that we forget that those come that we may be complete, so that we do not lack? In a world where people have become comfortable in lacking, the tests and trials are not what they desire, because you have become comfortable in a lacking state. When you have something great ahead of you and you know that it's going to take you from one place to another, why would you allow yourself not to go through the test? Sarah and Abraham was being tested. They were being tested to see if I wait to give them the gift, will they still believe me or will they laugh? I've told them I'm going to give them promises. I told them that they're going to be great. I told them that everything's going to be okay. So when I come to confirm the promise, they should be prepared. They should be ready. They already know this is coming. They should be excited. This is going to be great. When I come and I send my messengers to tell them we are about to produce what I said, they're going to be excited. But they laughed. They laughed in the face of confirmation. They laughed in the face of the angels of the Lord. They laughed. How do we put ourselves in a position to respond to confirmation in laughter? When I was going to do my text, I was going to title it, Don't Laugh at Your Promise. And then the Lord switched it to, He's about to make you laugh. I'm trying to figure out why He's about to make you laugh, if it not be that you have forgotten what the Lord said. So when it finally comes, when the confirmation of destiny comes, you don't know how to receive it because you've been so lame. We do not take ownership of the storms that you have placed yourself in, because that would be too much like right. When we talk about the lame man, even in the face of Jesus, he did not take responsibility for why he didn't drag himself to that pool. Jesus came to him. He said, what's going on? Do you want to be well? Do you see how close the pool is? What's happening? What's going on? He responds and says, nobody will take me to the pool Nobody will drag me to the water. I can't find any help. The lights are off. My bills are due. I don't have a job. I don't have a car. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no children. Woe is me. How long are you going to be there? Because as you take your time trying to get out of your lame state, the world is moving. The world is happening, and you are missing out on an opportunity to be great because you want to be lame. It's too hard to work hard. Faith without works is dead, and I've become comfortable in the shadow of death. I've become comfortable in the dry bones. I've become comfortable in a sunken state. I've become comfortable in the bottom of the barrel because it's too hard to get to the top. And so because I do not know how to be responsible with the gifts God has given me, I tear people down who are trying. Because I am so upset that I have spent so much time whining and crying, when I see success, when I see someone making it, I condemn them. I throw my rocks, because it's easier for me to tell you that you're wrong than for me to realize that I am as well. We do not walk in the Word of God because we don't want to read it. If it's not readily available on Instagram or Twitter, it's not worth it. You wake up in the morning to acknowledge the Prince of Air before you acknowledge the Prince of Peace, because you're in turmoil. So how can he be the Prince of Peace when you're in turmoil and you're in a storm? So we give credit to the enemy and try to get him to build castles, but credit to the enemy does not build castles. It builds chaos. So the chaos that you are standing in, my dear, I'm sorry, I hate to tell you, here's a nugget to take home. Sometimes it's you. Sometimes it's your inability to take ownership. Sometimes it's your disobedience. Sometimes it's your ear that's not hearing. Sometimes it's you. Until you are able to realize that it is you, you can't move forward. Going to consistently blame God for something that you are the blame for. He is a blameless God, a spotless God. However, as soon as we get into a storm, when we're in trouble, we reach out for God. When our children are in jail, we reach out to God. When the storms are heavy, we reach out to God. When we're in hate and anger, we reach out to God. But when everything's good, as long as everything's good, we don't reach out to God. And we expect him to bless us when we have not blessed him. We expect him to rise up and make things happen when we stifle the spirit and the presence of God in churches, because we are programmatic and things have to go by a schedule. And so, yes, God is in the midst, but he's not moving because no one has asked him to. What do we do? What do we do when we are infertile? When we're not producing, what do we do when we're trying to believe God, but all the things that are going on around us suggest that he's not there, he's not listening? What do we do when the pain becomes bigger than the purpose? when the pain becomes bigger than the promise, when the suffering is not worth, it's not worth the supply of the double portion that we get, what do we do? When we are consumed in our issue, what do we do? Well, Job worshiped. Let's see. Hannah prayed. Sarah laughed. They were rejoicing in the fire pit. I think that what we do when the suffering becomes bigger than our supply, when the suffering becomes bigger than our promise, what we do is begin to realize that it's not about us. Your suffering is not about you. Your suffering is something that you prayed for. Why? Well, how do I know that? You ask God to build your faith and strengthen you, and he's going to test it. You can't get it without testing. I wish there was a way. I really do, because I am a little tired of being tested as well. However, there's no way to get to endurance. There's no way to get to not lacking. There's no way to get to your promise if you are not willing to go through the test and the trial. There's no way to do it. So here's the thing. You can sit and you can complain, and that's cool. That's fine. But you have to understand that you cannot be angry at those who have decided to move in their suffering. You cannot be angry at those who gave God a yes while you sit in your no. You can't. You cannot condemn those who are trying because you won't. You can't. You can't. You have not been given the privilege to do so. So you have to shift who you are. You have to shift your perspective. You have to shift your story. Ooh, Dad, this is going to be good. So the Bible says that if you believe you have received, then you shall have it. What's the last thing you received? Because this works both ways. If you believe you have received the report of the doctor, then you shall have it. If you believe that you have received what the enemy is planting, then you shall have it. We go into the doctor's office. The doctor says, you have cancer. And you take that paperwork and you say, okay. And you walk out. And now you got cancer. And you're fighting, and you're sick, and you're tired, you received it. When the last time you told your doctor, I don't receive that? I don't receive that. I know your test, I get it. But stripes that happen way before this test says that you will lie. That's what it said in the book. I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just saying that in the book, it says that no weapon formed against me is going to be able to prosper. And this happened way before cancer, way before diabetes, way before infertility. God already declared great and mighty works are going to be complete in me. So